This is the Creative Sports Podcast. My name is Justin Peterson, and joining me are Garrett Wright.
That's what we do. We strive for excellence here.
And Brock Rahm.
This is funny. I wasn't recording there, so we got to do it again.
This is good. This is just stuff for the intro. This is the screw-ups.
Today, we're joined by Tony Price, who is the Assistant Director of Video Production at Maryland. Video production wasn't in the plans for Tony early on, but you wouldn't know it by hearing him speak. I highly recommend sticking around to hear his message to anyone who feels that their plan isn't working right now. I will say, too, Brett. No, because you said it, and I didn't even edit the last two, and they were, like, almost spot on. It just looked so horribly off when we actually did it in real time.
Yeah.
This is funny. I wasn't recording there, so we got to do it again. We go at 15.
All right.
Oh, wait, hold on. I closed it.
Oh, boy.
Okay. Yeah.
It's a disaster now. Shut it down.
Well, thanks for coming, Tony.
No, of course.
25. That one was actually perfect.
Oh, good to me.
That was impressive.
Hey, what's going on? It's Justin. Just wanted to give a shout out to APM for providing the track for us here on the Creative Sports Podcast. We're doing this podcast as an extension of the sports creative community on Slack. So if you're finding us and aren't a member of the community yet, you can sign up for free at sportscreativeslack.com. Well, we're excited to have Tony Price here with us from Maryland on the episode today, and I just want to give a quick rundown of Tony's background, and then we're going to jump into what he does at Maryland, and then we'll kind of reverse back out and kind of talk through his path, because it's definitely a unique path, but he's creating some really, really great content right now, so I think it'll be really interesting to get into how all of the his background and experiences have potentially shaped him and helped him understand the sports business field at large, in addition to becoming a production specialist with Maryland. So he initially started and went to Anderson University, then South Carolina. He was a strength and conditioning intern, and then he went to Clemson to be a sports medicine intern, went back to Anderson University as a senior admission counselor, went to Clemson University to get his master's in athletic leadership, ended up at Nova Southeastern University as a coordinator of digital media and graphic design, and now is at Maryland as an assistant director of video production. Hearing that, Tony, talk me through some of that, and then let's get into what you do now as the assistant director of video production at Maryland.
Yeah, for sure. It's, like we said, it's a crazy path. It's a very weird path for me. I always knew I wanted to be in sports. I played baseball in college. I played baseball since I was three. So I always wanted to stick around sports, but didn't know what that was going to look like. And, you know, when I got into college, I was like, well, I'm going to be an engineering major. So if that tells you how crazy this path really got, I went to one math class, I walked out and I called my mom and said, yeah, I can't do this. And I immediately changed my major after the first day of class. So, and I switched it to kinesiology. And from that point, I was like, okay, I want to be in sports. What does that look like? Went everything from athletic training to strength and conditioning, hadn't really considered anything in video. And, you know, did those internships and I decided I love strength and conditioning, but waking up every morning at 4 a.m., I just didn't have the same energy those guys have. For any of you that have been around a college strength and conditioning coach, they have to bring the energy every day. And that was, I'm a morning person, but not that often. So then went into doing my internship with athletic training and loved it, enjoyed it. But when I got into it, I didn't enjoy sitting around waiting. And you know, for any athletic trainer, they'll tell you any day they don't have to run anything out there or deal with anything was a good day. And for me, that wasn't me. I wanted to be in the middle of the action and I wanted to kind of be around the athletes and really have those relationships. And at that point, still didn't think about it and went on to, you know, start my career and be an admission counselor. And it's kind of funny how it started with, you know, we have to do all these presentations for incoming students and recruit families. And part of that recruitment process was we had to show them videos and and had to do all this, but I was the only person on my staff that understood the tech portion of things. And even then, I'm not a great AV tech. Like, do not stick me anywhere near that stuff, because I know if it looks like it plugs into something, then it probably does. So, you know, following just the basics. But from that point, really got more into the video stuff and realized we needed to update some videos and how we were going to do those things. And that's really kind of where it really kind of started, creating small things for little events that we were having on campus, and had a chance to run the university social accounts from that point. And so really just started to, that's where the seed kind of started to grow from. And my wife and I ended up then moving to Columbia, South Carolina. I'd been at Anderson for 3 years, enjoyed my time, but was ready for something different. So I actually worked at a middle school full-time while I sat down with my wife one night and said, you know, I want to make videos. And it was actually after watching, and I've told Nick Conklin this 1,000 times, they made this dream video for Clemson football a few years back. And I was always a little kid growing up. Like, I grew up a Clemson fan, and my uncle went to Clemson, and I'm just kind of a legacy thing. And I looked up and I was like, wow, that was me as a kid. And it just hit me in a different place where I said, you know what? I want to make people feel like that video made me feel. And that's really where it started. And you know, of course, my wife joked with me, oh, this will be an expensive hobby. And we laughed about it. And now 3 years later, we're living in College Park, Maryland. So it's a really crazy story. But yeah, it finally got me here. But the one thing that I look back and think about was, you know, I started as a freelancer. I reached out to my former high school athletic director and asked him, was like, hey, I know you guys are playing basketball. I'd love to just come and film and try to make some things from it. And I wasn't going to ask for anything because I had no clue what I was doing. I think, if I'm not mistaken, I think I had the camera in auto like the entire time. And I had, you know, a 16 to 35 millimeter kit lens on an A6000 and a 55 to 310 or 210 lens. And I was just like, we're just going to make this work. And of course, you look back at those things now and think, oh my gosh, like, I was so bad. But it was a learning curve, and it was something that I'm glad I had those opportunities. But the more I did things and the more I got involved, and luckily for me that season, the team won the state championship. So I filmed them all the way through that moment. And naturally, the more I did, the better I got. And the first time I ever did anything that was production-based was actually for the football team at the same high school. And they had gotten new helmets, and the coach was like, you know, we'd love for like a really cool, like production type video. And I'm like, I don't have lights. I don't have a backdrop. I don't have anything. So I actually grabbed a couple of flashlights, and my best friend came over and I said, I just need you to put this helmet on. And we filmed it in my guest bathroom in our house in Columbia. So it was the first video production piece that I actually ever did. But it was one thing that, you know, I always tell people, those times, whether it was doing my freelance work or when I got to Nova, because we were still building and we didn't really have lights. I had to make lights out of PVC pipe and some shop lights and really kind of piece some things together. But it showed me how creative you can be when you have a problem, but you need to solve it. And, you know, that is huge now when, you know, I'm at Maryland and we do have, you know, Austerolites and we do have, you know, C200s and we have those things, which are great. But, you know, going back to those times, it just really made such a big difference in like that creative mindset and how to get through those things.
Well, prepared you for the crazy coach asks as well, right?
Exactly. Okay. Exactly.
No, I think you hit on a really good point there of what a lot of young creators go through, which is I don't have the resources, but I know what I want to make in my head. And you do what you can to make that vision as close to what you thought as possible. Have you always felt that you were a very creative person, or did that come more as you decided, oh, I want to get more and more into videos? It might be a chicken and the egg type thing, but which one of those kind of came first for you?
In looking back at it now, it's one of those things I didn't piece together at the time. I've always been a creative person when I was younger. I enjoyed drawing. I wasn't great at it, but I enjoyed drawing. I was in the band in middle school, all the way up through high school. And then as I got into college, I picked up guitar, as most college guys do, because, you know, we're trying to meet someone. So I picked up guitar and all those things. And, you know, it's one of those things I look back at and I'm like, I've always had this. It was just a matter of finding where to place it. And, you know, like I said, as the more it's grown, the more I'm like, okay, like, you know, I enjoy movies and I enjoy those things. Now, I obviously watch movies for a very different purpose than I did before where I'm looking at, okay, how did they set that shot up? How did they do this? Even over quarantine, my wife and I were watching, watched all the Lethal Weapons, and I'm just looking through scenes like, oh, that's so dope how they did this, you know, back then versus now, and, you know, how some of those things are still relevant, but they're also a little different. So, but it's always been there.
It's interesting you bring up the music, because that seemed like a hot button thing after we talked to Daryl, that a lot of people got excited and wanted to talk about how music has influenced them in their production content and how they create. How have you seen that work for you?
It's huge. One of the things that I always talk to our students about with our intern program is really hearing the music and making sure it's not just, you know, you can take any current top 100 song and make a video out of it, but can you make it different than everyone else? Can you have it hit on the beats? Can you have it, you know, take advantage of not just the cheesy moments in a song where they say something that's very obvious, and really make it something that's unique and different? And I think that's why when I look back at it, I enjoy making the cinematic stuff because it really kind of goes into that orchestral feel, and you really get to feel the music and feel that moment. Same thing when you look at movie trailers, that's what gets us so excited about watching movies. And it's that slow build, and it's the audio behind it. So everything that, you know, music provides, I think it changes everything about what you do, but it's, you've got to really hear the music.
You touched on the intern portion there. So let's dive into what you currently do at Maryland, because the internship is part of it, but you primarily work with the men's basketball program. Can you give us a little bit more of a sense of your day-to-day responsibilities there?
Yeah, obviously it's very different now than it was before, but you know, when I first got here, you know, we're really building here. I think that's one thing that a lot of people hopefully have taken notice of with the University of Maryland is, you know, we've started taking our video production very seriously. And that starts with our student program, where we want to make sure that this is what students want to do when they finish. You know, we look at, you know, everyone looks at the Ohio States, the Clemsons, the South Carolinas, and those programs and say, wow, they've produced some really great talent coming out of those programs. And
I think you missed Nebraska in that.
And Nebraska, you get, honestly, 100% Nebraska. I think last year when it was I can't remember the very first video that came out. I think it was the first game recap that everyone went, wow, like Nebraska really put themselves on the map, like outside of what you guys have already done and like grown with. But when that video came out, it really caught a lot of people's attention. Just the style and the fact that, again, like, as you guys know, Nebraska has a very rich history, especially football, where, you know, Maryland has that same history, but we haven't had that same production history. Maryland is primarily, you know, a very strong journalism school, but really hasn't, you know, we haven't really made a splash with production, and that's been kind of our goal. So my day-to-day looks very different than I think I probably would have thought when I came in, where, yes, I am responsible for men's basketball, but when I first came in, we were, you know, we had a few students that were brought in an old regime where, you know, things weren't necessarily in line and they weren't being taught, you know, even the camera basics. So, you know, coming in, the first thing we had to do was, number one, get bodies that really wanted to be here, because the expectations changed, where, you know, coming to football games was not an option. This is a requirement, and this is the expectation. If you want to be in this industry, you've got to be willing to put the work in. And that's from internship level through, you know, even if you're a director, creative director, associate AD of creative content, doesn't matter. Like, you've got to be ready to put that work in, because we're in the entertainment industry at the end of it. And so something that, you know, my day-to-day looks like is, you know, one thing that I like to do is try to get all my to-dos down. Right now it's a very long list, as we talked earlier. You know, it's crossover season. So, you know, preparing video board content, as well as still trying to maintain the social aspect for men's basketball and showing the message. I think that's the one thing that people forget about, is sometimes it's not just creating a video for the sake of creating a video. You know, what's the message behind it? What's the team focus for this year? You know, on top of, you know, not even counting in NIL content that's on its way and here for most schools. So I think right now it's about, you know, going through those to-dos and making sure that, number one, that the priorities that need to be taken care of for that week are taken care of, but scheduling students to make sure that they are at men's and women's lacrosse, as Maryland is a very strong school in lacrosse. Same thing with covering some of our other sports. So it's really kind of divvying up those responsibilities for our student interns and following up with them, and really making sure that, you know, I'm on point with men's basketball, being that we're 20 days away from tip off.
I think I know Justin, Garrett, and myself obviously all came from a student program. It's what got me into this industry, really. Without that job, I wouldn't. I came into college as a music major. I've said it before on the podcast. But having my student job is really what pointed me in the direction where I thought I wanted to go, or where I knew I wanted to go. There's a lot of schools, I think, that see building a student program as extremely daunting, especially if schools maybe don't have journalism schools or media production departments within the overall university structure. What tips could you give to a school right now that's looking to build out their student program, or maybe make their student program a little bit more robust than it is right now?
The first thing that I had at Nova, it was started. They didn't have a student program. It didn't exist. And I was the only person for photo, video, and design. So that was terrifying, but I was ready for it. I was excited for it. But one of the things that I would say the most important thing outside of anything you can teach a student is relationships, because that's where things are really going to change. If you get, like, I think on my first year there, I got one student, and he happened to be playing for the men's soccer team. And, you know, he was just doing kind of design on the side. And I was like, hey, you know, would you like to help with some of this creative content? And we still have a super strong and great relationship to this day. But because of that relationship, like, we're able to kind of build off of each other. And by three and a half months of being in the program at Nova, he was pushing me, because I'd gotten to the point where I was doing so much that I wasn't focused on how do I make this content better. It was kind of just getting through it because I was so busy. And it kind of woke me up. And sometimes I think that's something a lot of staff members are afraid of, is sometimes your students are going to be the ones that push you, and that's okay. And, you know, I think that's something that a lot of people lose track of, but it's the relationships. Like, if you get one or two students one year and you have great relationships with them and they have a good time and you take care of them, that's where your student program is going to build from. It's not going to be when you have eight students and they're all epic creators and they're all going off to do these crazy things. But it's really, at the end of the day, like, people will always remember how you made them feel. And I think that's something that's going to, you know, be relevant for any program that's creating a student program.
Well, and that's one of the things I always said from my time at Minnesota, was like, we had to build a student program when I got there as well. And like, it was the middle of the first year, and I heard they were all going to have just only a student producers party. And I was like, yes, we've made it. Like, we've created this bond. We've created this, like, you know, thing now where they just want to get together with each other and have a party. And it's not like, oh, I'm doing this weekend, I'm doing this weekend. Like, they're getting together. And I think you're spot on where that cohesion and the chemistry that you have within a student program, both, you know, with the students themselves and with you as a leader, is so key to building that and creating that.
Yeah, for sure. If that's not there, it doesn't matter. Like, two students can quickly turn into six or seven. Like, last year we lost, I think, five or six seniors, and we had to minimize our student staff due to COVID. But I've had more students reach out to me since coming back to campus, and students that are eager to be in the video production world. And that's exactly what we wanted. And sometimes it's taking those few students and letting your work do the talking from that point, because people will find you if you're doing it.
I think another big part of it is showing that it's fun. Like, what we do is a lot of fun. It's one of the main reasons I wanted to join Husker Vision. It looked like fun, you know, and if you have your students you work for, it'll go out of there and say like, yeah, it's a job, but we have a ton of fun. We get to work in sports, you know, word of mouth, especially on a college campus, spreads very quickly. And I'd say most student employees, when we were in college, it was, oh, I'm going to go tell my friend about this, and they're going to come work here. Or I'm going to go tell my friend about this, and then they're going to come work here. And that seemed to be the way it was at Nebraska with us. When I was at Notre Dame, that is definitely the way it was, you know. So word of mouth, college campus, believe it or not, can spread pretty quick.
100%. I mean, honestly, that's the one thing I learned when I was an admission counselor. Like, everyone asks us, how do you keep hitting your admission numbers when school keeps getting more expensive? And every student that walked through the door in our office, the first thing we said is, if we can get them just to love being here and be comfortable being here, if even if they don't choose us, I mean, Anderson's only 35 minutes from Clemson. So, you know, we're trying to compete with a very large and very prestigious academic institution in, you know, recruiting. And one of the things that people would always say, like, if we don't choose here, I'm telling my friends, I'm going to tell my cousin, I'm going to tell their, who's going to tell their friends, and who's going to tell their friends. So again, like, word of mouth is still, outside of social, is still a major recruiting tool.
I want to jump back to something that you said a little earlier, you know, kind of talking about the creativity versus the message and how you balance kind of those two things. You know, when you have a really creative idea, you have something that you want to do, but maybe it's a little, you know, off brand or off message, you know, a little bit from what you've done in the past. Like, how do you balance those two concerns when you're working with a team, when you're working in an organization that kind of already has a style or a brand?
Yeah, I think that's one thing for us. I've had the benefit of being at Maryland because we are kind of building. And that's something that I've really enjoyed, is kind of having the middle ground where if we want to do something that's a little, I say, not fully off-brand, but a little different than maybe the message of everything else, it's okay. But you have to pick and choose those moments. So, you know, for basketball, if we're in the middle of the season and I have a video that's going to be funny, but our whole team's mention is about focus and work. Okay, well, is it funny enough to be okay? Or is this something we're just trying to throw in the middle to just kind of check a box? And I think that's where you find the balance of, you know, telling an athlete's story or a team's story that, okay, yes, we're focused on work, but we're still having fun. And I think you're seeing that a lot with a lot of teams, that especially football, where it's like, yes, it's about the work, but we're still having fun at the same time. So I think a lot of that is just finding those balance points of when is it okay versus you're just doing it to try and either fit a trend or check a box or any of that. And I think that's one thing people have to be very wary of, is not just doing it to follow trends.
Well, and that's what I was just about to say. You kind of led into that perfectly, but you know, how much of your content schedule is pre-planned, and how much of it are you just kind of like, you know, you see something and you go with it?
So that's really funny, because I feel like everyone has a plan, and I'll never, and before I took my first job, again, like one of the people that I reached out to when I got my first job in sports was Nick Conklin. And again, amazing guy. Like, you know, we met twice in person, but at that point we hadn't met, and I reached out to him on Twitter and I said, I really need your help. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm excited about it. I've been a freelancer. And the first thing that I asked him was like, so, you know, I'm going to be creating content for 17, 18 sports. What do? And how do I manage that? And the one thing that he said is prepare to react. And that's something that I have in, that I hold on to still today and from that very first phone call. And the one thing that I'll never forget about that is everything we do is I try to plan it out. I have a plan of, you know, whether it's pregame, in-game, post-game, in between weeks, even right now, like with COVID, and you see teams having to cancel games or reschedule games, we're planning content for those weeks, but we have no idea what those weeks are going to look like when we get there. And that's where we can say, okay, we have a plan, but if we have to adjust that plan, then we can adjust it based on that moment. Minnesota was a huge example of that last year, where, you know, we went into that game where, you know, Anthony Cowan is setting a career starts record. Okay, we've got this content plan. And this is a huge game for Maryland basketball. We have pregame, in-game, and post-game content planned, and we're expecting to go up there. And we knew it was going to be tough, but, you know, the plan at that point was to keep winning, because we were only a few wins away from a Big Ten championship. And if you guys, I don't know if you guys got to watch that game. I mean, it was a rough game. I mean, some of our guys went down with foul trouble early, and, you know, guys weren't shooting the way we thought they would. And we were going on a gauntlet schedule at that point. It was, you know, we're run down at the end of the year. And, you know, Daryl Morsell hits a game-winning three, you know, at the end of the game. And that's when the whole plan goes out the window. But we were ready to make those changes. So we were like, okay, we're going to do one-off content. We're going to get, you know, celebrations in the locker room. We're going to have all of these things. And we decided to go with – that was the one game that I look back and say – you know, we could have made a cinematic recap, but at that moment, even though it was a big win, the content of that kind of one-off content and those reaction content
served everything we needed up until the next game. So that's where the plan kind of went out the window.
That's perfect. I love that. Cause like, you know, anyone who's listened to this podcast before, you know, I talk about that on my end as a feature producer, it's plan, organize, have your stuff in order before you go. But like, to your point, the reason you do that is because our industry is one that is impossible to plan for. Like, sports aren't scripted and things get crazy with video. Like, it's two different industries coming together that are crazy, and you put them together and you never know what's going to happen. So yeah, to your point, like, planning ahead is important, not just to have the plan, because it allows you the flexibility to go off script like that. And I think that's when some of, you know, our best content comes out, I know on my end, and it sounds like you feel the same.
Oh, for sure. For sure. Those moments are why we create in the first place. I mean, you know, no matter where Daryl Morcel goes in the next 30, 40 years of his life, we will always have that shot of him and that excitement at the end of the game. And that's, at the end of the day, that's what it's about.
Right. You almost have to think, and I know I've said this before in this podcast, as if you're not just a content producer, you're a historian. Right. You think about iconic shots and iconic moments and how they're covered, and you never know when that's going to happen, you know. So having the plan like you described and covering it in the best way possible, not just makes you a good content producer, but a good historian as well.
Yeah, for sure. And that's something that someone actually posted that on Twitter. I cannot remember who it was, but it said, you know, just remember, like, especially now, like, people are going to look back 20, 30 years from now, how in the world do these people cover sports in the middle of a pandemic and, you know, showing up for testing every morning? And, you know, how did they travel? How did they do this? Like, you know, we look back at, you know, old footage of people and we're like, wow, that's so crazy. And, you know, that's something that in 20, 30, 40 years, people are going to look back and say, that was the COVID year, the year that no one could be in the stadium. And, you know, crowd noise is being pumped in and you can hear everything, but you can't get too close and they're filming from the stands or whatever. So it's such a, this especially now is one of the most historic things we will ever get to cover.
And thus why asset management and archiving and everything is very important. That's something we haven't really touched on that we should probably talk on in a future podcast too. But I want to get into your ideation and how you go about that process of concepting for working directly with the men's basketball program. How does that usually start? We've talked a little bit before on here about working directly with a coach, with a team, that you get to know them a little bit better and that kind of bleeds into the content a little bit more and allows you more insight into how you think they think and what they're looking for. So I'm just curious to get your perspective on that.
Yeah, obviously this is year two for me, and I was literally telling someone about an hour ago how year two is so much easier than year one. You know, year one, I'm coming in, I'm the new guy, and, you know, I didn't really know the team, and I'm trying to figure out the history of this team, what, you know, I studied and looked at last year, but like, really, like, what did those moments mean? You know, coming in, Maryland lost in the last second to LSU in the NCAA tournament, and, you know, how did that hurt their fans? How did that affect, you know, how the coach reacted, how the players reacted, the guys returning, who's moving on? So I'm really trying to figure out what is this team's story before I even get started, because that's the one thing I'm going to be responsible for all year. And getting to know them, one thing that I try to tell people is that even if I'm not going to create anything crazy epic from practice, being there and showing my face made the absolute biggest difference in how I ideate and plan for content and plan for any production shoots or storytelling pieces or mini docs. And what that kind of did is my first project that I had with men's basketball was our DMV Made series. And I'm not exaggerating. I literally was laying in bed one night and I was like, why don't we just take these guys out of their element and get them off the basketball court and take them back where they came from and just make these very short series about what these guys want to do, you know, what they like, what do they want their legacy to be? And, you know, what are their plans when they're done? And, you know, really focusing on them as people and humanizing those athletes, because, you know, everyone looks at them and says, oh, I can't believe you missed that 3-point shot. Oh, I can't believe you missed that layup. You know, why would you foul that, guys? And, you know, they don't come in here at 6 a.m. or stay till, you know, midnight or later working on their craft to foul someone or to miss that layup. And so that was my goal, is to, for people to look at them as people and understand that they're no different than us. The only difference is they're a little more athletic and they can jump a lot higher than I can. But the one thing I really loved about the ideation of that is really getting to know them and understanding their story. And that DMVMA series really set the tone for the year. Those guys really having a chance to put their faces on something that wasn't them on a basketball court, but, you know, showing Sticks and Daryl in Baltimore and taking Ann around DC. And that's something that, you know, we were wanting to continue this year. It is a little more challenging because we can't really go into public spaces as much, but that series will be coming back. So stay tuned for that one. But it is something that when we start off, it's about who the athlete is and who this team is. And that's starting everything with our content verticals and how we break down the way things look. You know, is it a point of view story? Is this going to be Maryland basketball culture? Is this a swag piece? And really lining that up to match with what the coaches are really wanting to tell that story to be. And that's, you know, I think last year it took a while to find the voice, to be honest, like for myself, and figure out, okay, like, what is this deal? And as we kept going through the year and we kept having these comebacks, I was like, okay, I got it. You know, we sat down as a team between our comm staff, myself and marketing and our coaching staff, and said, okay, like, this is going to be a theme where we're going to be fighters. That's who we are. And everything from that point forward was about that fight and not ignoring the fact that, yeah, we went down in the first half, as, you know, people always joke, they had us in the first half, I'm not going to lie. But looking back and saying, you know what, but we still won the game. And, you know, that this team's not going to give up, the coach isn't going to give up, no matter what happens. And I think that served us really well going into that last stretch of games when we had to play Michigan State at home and lost at Rutgers and had to come back and beat Michigan on our home court, for a Big Ten championship. So that messaging really took some time to build out, but going into year two, kind of knowing exactly who these guys are and knowing who the leaders are and who to focus on. So it really starts there. That's even with any productions that we create.
I think one of the interesting things that's happening kind of in this industry and within college athletics specifically is kind of the producer getting assigned to a specific team. I think you see that a little bit more than, at least in the past, I've seen a lot of just general producers. You know, you have 3-4 producers and they just, whoever picks up what project, but you're starting to see the model turn to, you know, the football team has a producer, the basketball team has a producer. And, you know, at Maryland and with your role, how does content get like assigned and ideated? You know, are the coaches and the team in charge of, you know, telling you what they want and you have to go? Does that come from the comms? Does that come from marketing? How does that play all the different people that are involved in those decisions for you at Maryland?
Yeah, I think that's one thing I always try to remind people, especially any freelancers that come in. I tell them, like, look, it's a little different. You've got a lot of hands in the pot and things that you have to do athletics wise that are sponsorship focused, and some that are, you know, that you really have to do. If you have a sponsor that we're going to, you know, sell some, piece of content, then that's something that we can't miss. And that's something that we have to figure out how to make it work. But with that being said, I think that trust has really been built enough here that I don't have the coaches, you know, coming over saying, oh, we really want this, we really need this. And, you know, there are times that obviously, like when we have recruiting stuff and things that we need to help with, but that's very few and far between. But that trust has been established at this point that, you know, I can sit down with my comm staff, I can sit down with our marketing staff, and we can talk about, okay, what's the plan for the year? I mean, that's where we're at right now. And saying, okay, like if we're going to do this series, we're going to do that series, like where does this land, especially with all the social justice stuff? Like, how are we going to plan that out for the year? You know, we don't want it to be something that just goes up one time and we say, okay, check the box and move on. And that's something that we're planning that out, you know, to stretch out as long as we can. And same thing with, you know, introducing our players, you know, what's the first message we want people to hear from them? Where do things fit in where players are talking about how great coach is and the things that he's done for them? So, you know, a lot of it is really mostly comm staff, marketing, and myself with, you know, broadcast and production. But there are requests that can come from coaches if they have, for example, like especially now where we're not really allowed to be around too terribly much, but you know, we'll have a team that says, oh, we're having a scrimmage coming up. We would like to request someone to be there just to cover that. But, you know, for us, trust has really been established with our department that we're going to be there and we're going to do a great job covering it and still be able to tell your story. So it's something that I think every department at the end of the day, if you can build that trust, that people are going to, you know, tend to stay out of your way, but also don't think that that doesn't mean never ask them what they want either. I think that's something really important, is to say, a lot of creators want to step back and say, hey, let me be creative. But sometimes the people that are taking a step back and looking at it from a wider view, because you're so zoned in on the creative process, sometimes they have some really great ideas, and those things are really going to make or break a project on occasion.
Yes, the constraints that sometimes also help push and really elevate the creativity as part of that as well. I'm curious if you could get into what you typically shoot. I'm assuming you travel with the basketball team to pretty much all their games, if not all of them. How do you travel? What do you take on the road? What does your equipment setup look like when you're on the floor shooting?
Yeah, so it's a little different than I would have said if you'd asked me a year ago. Because I started with mirrorless. I love the run and gun style if I can. But there were a couple of games last year we had, obviously crossover season, we had some cameras split out between a few people. So I took the Sony FS5 and I was like, man, this is kind of nice. I don't have to like hook up the mic. I don't have to hook all this up. I can kind of leave it all pieced together and have my ND filters already built into the camera. And I was like, okay, this is kind of nice. So I really enjoyed that aspect. Most of the time I'll shoot on an A7 III. Shoot pregame with either a Sigma 16 or a Sigma 35, depending on the moment that I was really trying to capture, because I knew, and you guys will laugh at this, my pregame shots, I always kind of wonder, okay, if I walk in and I see the marketing staff has the funnels with the fire and the smoke and all that stuff, okay, I want to use the 16 so that way I can get a few wide shots of the guys, like watching the starting lineup for the other team, really build that atmosphere, because at Illinois, that was one of the biggest games in their history. And that was, really thinking about how I was going to build that up and how I was going to get shots of those guys with the fans going crazy behind them. And I wanted it as wide as possible, because I can still always crop in just a little if I needed to get anything out of it, versus having to stand, you know, a few feet further back, even if it's only a few millimeters for that 35. But in game, primarily use the 18-105 Sony lens. But this year, we've actually switched over a little bit more to Canon. So that's been a lot. If you ask me, I'm still Sony at heart, but I cannot lie, I do love the Canon cinema cameras. They are incredible. So we have been using the C200s and C100s. So I've been primarily using those at practice. And I think I'm going to switch up my approach a little bit this year with a 16 to 35, and then have a 70 to 200 for in-game. Because I think last year, I was always nervous before every game. I think that never went away, because I didn't want to miss anything, and I didn't want to miss a big dunk or a big steal or a reaction from the bench or even the opposing team. I think that's something people, you know, lose track of sometimes, is I still need to be filming even, you know, and save those clips. I think that's really a part of the story, especially last year. But, really have gotten a lot more comfortable using a 70 to 200 on the basketball court, but the 18 to 105 allowed me to get a little wider when I've got guys like Sticks who are 6'10 coming in and dunking the ball, and you could actually see him, and it's not just, you know, head up.
I think I think run and gun's a good term you brought up, because I think people, when they think run and gun, they think, oh, I've got to be as small as possible, you know, whereas to me, run and gun is I just want to be able to pick up and shoot right as quickly as possible. And form factor definitely matters in certain scenarios. You know, if you're on the bench sideline, you don't want a huge like Aria Mira on your shoulder, you know, trying to like get around if that's going to be out of place there. But for me personally, I think you said it with the F5, and you're like, I kind of like shooting on the F5. I like keeping my cameras as rigged as possible and as pick up, turn on, shoot. So that way it's less time for me from a camera that's completely off to capturing a moment I may not have thought, could happen. So I think that's really good perspective you had there, and really good that you're keeping an open mind of like, oh, I love Sony, but I like Canon and Canon cinema cameras. And I think, moving outside of that brand loyalty and trying out everything that's out there, is definitely going to give you a good perspective on what's most efficient for you to shoot.
I thought you were going to go with the crop sensor angle there, Brock.
Nope. Not saying anything about it.
Tony, I'm assuming you're shooting, when you're talking about those lenses, you're shooting on photo lenses during the game. Does that mean you're shooting more ISO type content and you're getting like a feed from, like a game feed from somewhere else? What does that kind of look like?
Yeah, so it really depends. So when we got here, and just to be transparent, like Maryland was, we were not in a great place with gear. Like we were really building and really trying to find our way because some of the stuff had been purchased before I got here, before my boss got here. And we were kind of just trying to piece it together, to be honest. And that was something that, you know, I think a lot of people don't understand about college athletic departments is everyone thinks, you know, people have these like crazy cameras, and that's not always the case. Sometimes we are really piecing stuff together and you just don't realize it. And so something that when we came in, you know, we had some really good Sony stuff. We had, you know, the 18105s, which are extremely universal, but they're F4. So not great for production based stuff. And then, you know, we got a little more invested into Sigma. Obviously they're cheaper, but still provide you, you know, they're primes, but they still give you a really good f-stop and aperture. So when you're shooting those production setups, you can have it a little darker and you're not having to stress about grain. But, you know, for the practices I've been able to go to, you know, they're, I enjoy the 16 to 35 if I'm shooting 4K 60, which is something that we have started testing out a little bit more. Just for the sake of being able to push in and with us having to be further back, that's something. The file sizes are larger, but the benefits of it when I can't be within 6 feet of a player, I can still get that same look that I would if we had a normal year. But also looking more into those 24 to 70s and all that. So it depends, to be honest. And I think that's something we're all, I mean, right now, especially with basketball, we're just trying to figure out is really what does this look like if, you know, even though I'm death tested daily, you know, arenas are going to have different, you know, sections you can be in, different responsibilities. They still may allow people on the floor. So like I said, that's something that I think will depend on the location. So I think for this year, it really is going to be a testing out process to see what's going to work best for each situation. Because when I'm on the road, it's just me and that's on both ends of the floor. But thanks to the Big Ten and them, you know, having the creators on the other side sometimes for the schools, you know, having those Big Ten cameras there is huge because last year Daryl's celebration at Minnesota was on the other end of the court. And of course I had to run across to get it, but luckily Big Ten creator was there and was able to capture that moment. So we do have a little bit of help on the road thanks to that process as well.
You know, we touched on your whole background earlier and, you know, just hearing you talk about the equipment and the depth of which you talk about the equipment and the understanding that you have of the equipment is interesting because that's usually something that people pick up over time once they get out of school and what to use and what situations and some of that. So I'm just curious where you started to really get into that equipment and how you have developed that sense of what works for what situations.
Yeah, so equipment for me, obviously, I think any creator you talk to would give you their dream loadout and say, this is exactly what I want. This is exactly the lenses I would want. This is the camera I would want. But for me, it's still a growing process. I think that's something that, you know, everyone looks at and says, oh yeah, I really understand this. But I'm going to be honest with you. Like, you know, I look at Red cameras and I'm just now being more intrigued by, you know, what they do because I understand the specs a little bit more than I did maybe a year ago or even 2 years ago. Because again, like coming from being a freelancer where mirrorless is number one, it's cheaper and easier for me to get a hold of than, you know, even if you look at those Sony A7S3, it's like, yeah, I'd much rather pay $2,000 for this because that's more realistic for what I'm getting and still have 4K 120 and, you know, have the HD at 240 frames per second. But I don't have the money in my budget to get a Canon C200 and, you know, get the mic along with it and then switch, you know, lens systems. But it's something that, you know, as I've grown and learned more, a lot of it came from, and I'm sure you guys, Peter McKinnon was a huge one. I literally studied and watched his videos over and over and over again. And a lot of that, that really changed. He did this B-roll challenge. It's been like 3 years ago now. And that absolutely changed the way I saw every piece of equipment I used because shooting B-roll really challenged me. It was like the challenge was always, and I still do this with my students. It's, I need you to make something that is seemingly uninteresting look interesting. And that will change the way you view your lenses because how do you, you know, run your camera across the keyboard and make it look interesting and make it look cinematic and tight and clean and all that. So that's really where it started because, you know, early on I'm looking at all these numbers on these lenses. I'm like, I don't get it. I don't understand. And the more I got into it, the more I studied and the more I thought about, you know, what would I want in these situations and understanding that depth of field. So it was really just studying a lot of YouTube. And that's where I really learned and grew. And again, not being afraid to ask people questions. I think that's something a lot of creators need to be comfortable with. And for those of us that have been in the field for, you know, a while, understand that it's, don't be, you know, don't not respond to people. Like, I know that one thing that's always been nervous for me is reaching out to people and saying, you know, are they going to think I'm weird for not knowing this? Because maybe this is something I should know by now, but it's okay. Like, we're all still learning, and there's no one, there's no single person in this field that knows literally everything about the field. Because even if someone is making movies, and I actually met with an NBC producer, and she was like, yeah, your world is so different from mine. And I'm like, yeah, like, you know, for us, we're having to crank stuff out, you know, in minutes or hours or days, and they're working on posters for months. And it's like, it's such a different world. And so I think just not being afraid to ask people questions is where I really started to grow to. And just being vulnerable, I think that's something that any creator, if you can ask any stranger a question, then you're going to be fine. Because the day that you're, the first time you stand out on a court or a field and you're surrounded by 18,000 or 85,000 or 100,000 people, it's going to feel the same way. And you're going to feel like a fish out of water for about 5 minutes, and you're going to be able to refocus and capture that content. Cause I think that's something that's extremely important, is, you know, understanding that just being vulnerable and not being afraid to ask questions.
Yeah. I think, you know, we talk a lot about, you know, networking up. I think when we talk about networking, it's always thought of as like, you know, young creatives talking to people above, but I also think it's important. I'm going to say networking down, but that's not even what I meant. I don't want it to sound like, you know, more important or better. It just, I do think it's important for the people in the industry that have been here a long time to give back and to network with those that are younger. Like, because if you don't, like, all the advice that we give about networking for young people is no good if we don't have people who are willing to respond, you know, that are leaders in the industry that are older. Like, that's how all of us got here. That's how all of us are going to continue to grow. And also, some of the younger people in the industry have really good ideas. Like, it's really possible to learn, you know, for me as a 34-year-old, from someone who's 24, like, I look at those people and what they're doing all the time younger, and it's like, wow, like, that's such a great idea. It's so cool. It's so creative. And the opportunity to be vulnerable and just learn from people younger than you and learn from people who are maybe in the start of their career is so, so important. So I love that you hit on that.
Yeah. One of the best ideas we had, and we're hopefully going to do more of these this year, is one of my production assistants. He had only been graduated for a little bit. And we were sitting in the office trying to figure out, how do we do a play breakdown without having a guy watch film, without copying something someone's already done. And we were joking about something, and he said, my name is whatever, and let me tell you how I got here. And I'm like, that's it. That's what we're going to do. And I was like, you know, those movies that open with, you know, that moment where the person's in the middle of this, and then you go into this idea. And we started this whole series called The Breakdown. And we kind of show the start of the play. The guy's like either about to dunk the ball or something crazy is about to happen. And you pause it and say, you know, you do a quick interview with them or a quick hit after, you know, the game's over, and come back to that piece of content. But it's showing that one-off player, that moment for that player, but in a completely different light. So you get to hear the player's thoughts and hear the player's, you know, things. It's like, was that really the plan? And they can tell you, yeah, no, that wasn't really the plan. Or, you know, you really get an idea of, you know, what it's like to be inside their head in that moment. Cause most of us will never know what it's like to hit a game winning three, or, you know, in front of that many people, or to, you know, be mauled on the court after you do that, or, you know, be on the sideline when something happens. So it's just like, you know, a different way to do that. And like I said, he's younger than me, but, you know, again, like, he's someone that I'm responsible for helping grow. But in that moment, he helped me come up with a great idea for my team. And, you know, I think that's something that's really important. Again, like, your students and can push you, or your interns or whoever is under you can always push you and help you grow more than you think.
So this whole conversation has really been about developing your message and making sure that that's the focus and what you're starting with, and that when you're creating content, that it really needs to be message based. So I want to, I guess, try and bring this home with the question of, what message would you give to people who feel like they have an unordinary path, or feel like they have have gone a different route than what is quote unquote traditional of how to get into this business, because you've made it work. And I'm just curious to hear your thoughts and what you would share with those people.
Yeah, honestly, the first thing that I think of is don't give up. I think that was really tough for me for a while. And I created. And, you know, I was even if I was still in college, like I would have been a kid at Anderson University, not a kid at Kansas State or Ohio State or Clemson or South Carolina or Nebraska or anywhere. And I would have still been a kid at a small Division II school. And, you know, even when I was at Nova, it still felt like that. Okay, like I'm a little bit older and than some of these people that are creating this content, and how do I keep up? And, you know, I'm almost 30 and, you know, I've only been in this, you know, area for 3 years. But the thing that you have to understand, if you're entering late, you are going to have to grind to start. You are going to have to make some sacrifices. You know, that was one thing for myself and my family that we understood. If this is something I wanted to do, I was going to work every day from 8 to 4 and then going to basketball games and driving to, you know, semifinals and covering stuff for the South Carolina High School League. And, you know, then on top of that, when I felt like that wasn't enough, I started diving into Photoshop and design and making yourself marketable. And that was something that if you asked me, I would have never thought that graphic design would be something that I was going to end up in, but I knew I needed it. And I knew that it was going to benefit me in the long run. And really making sure that you know that it's going to be a grind, but just honestly not giving up. I put in, golly, probably 40 plus applications. And honestly, most of the time didn't make it past the opening round because my degree was not in video production. It wasn't in design. It was in, and at that time I was still getting my master's. I didn't even have it yet. And that was something that was really tough in figuring out how I was going to make that work. And I did get to a point, like after my first year, when we were living in Columbia and I was still working at the middle school, and I just got so down because it's like, well, this is really struggling. Like it's been a year and I still haven't made any moves. And lo and behold, the second that I started to kind of give up a little bit and just feel like, okay, maybe this isn't what I thought it was going to be. And I started covering some football. And that's when it really started hitting and people were like, okay, like maybe this guy can do this. And Nova Southeastern gave me an opportunity. And at that moment, again, like, no, it's not a Power Five institution. It's not even a Division I school, but understanding that just because if you're an intern at a big Power Five school and a big conference, just humble yourself enough to know that if you're going to go to a Division II school or even a small D1, that you can create amazing content and change the way people view that. And that was the one thing I really am super excited about when I had my chance at Nova, that people were like, man, like Nova's really doing some different stuff. And the same thing at Northwest Missouri State. If you guys don't follow their content, they do incredible stuff. Like, and a lot of smaller schools are doing those things, and they're creators that I think fly under the radar because they're not at the big Power Five schools. So just something to kind of, for those people that are, you know, coming in late or taking a non-traditional path, just don't give up and keep creating, because people are going to find you and share your work. But I think the one thing that I really, really think is important about all of this is even when you share your work and people will tell you, great job, and we love this and we love that, just set your ego to the side. I think that's something that's always really difficult for creators, because we do kind of live and die by our content, it feels like, and understand that you are separate from that. And don't, you know, tie yourself to, well, that wasn't as good as I wanted it to be. And that was something Justin King told me at South Carolina when we talked, is just like, if you're going to freak out every time because, you know, it's not perfect and it's not exactly what I wanted, you're never going to grow in this field because you're constantly trying to outdo yourself. Like, work hard and do that. But did you do the best you could given the circumstances you were given? If the answer is yes, then move on and keep creating, because everyone looks at a piece of content and is willing to pick it apart, but no one knows what that person is going through in their personal life, in their work life. Who knows if they were handed the project at the very last minute, at the 11th hour, and then who knows if a camera went out and stopped working for whatever reason. I think we've all been in that situation where, you know, we tested everything and then the second the talent shows up, something goes wrong. And that's just the nature of the business. But understand, you know, again, like, don't give up and keep creating. Like, I know everything's not going to be perfect, but just keep creating and people will find you.
We'd love to hear your thoughts, feedback, and suggestions, so pop on over to the Sports Creative Community on Slack and connect with us and your fellow creatives there. The quickest way to get us to stop this podcast is to not tell anyone about it. So leave us your 5-star rating and don't forget to subscribe so you're the first person to catch each new episode. And remember, the world needs your voice, so keep creating.